Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590 The Fan present Point Taken, a podcast connecting you to the sports and pop culture issues you care about and the guests you want to hear more from. Now, here's Carolyn Cameron and Greg Brady.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Point Taken, episode... Oh, I've lost count again. Carolyn Cameron and Greg Brady, we have James Cebulski stopping by, my former co-host for Sportsnet Central and the new morning show host, along with many others on Sportsnet 650, which launches Labor Day.
Yeah, what a terrible shift. Couldn't he get anything better than mornings? That's the worst.
Wait a second.
For sleeping.
Oh, yeah.
Sleeping continuously.
Good time slot, though.
It's a good time slot. That said, the dream gig, I don't want to move to the West Coast to do it, but when all the sports and you live this end earlier, isn't life better?
Oh, it's amazing.
Than midnight
it's
endings
amazing.
For NFL games and 1 a.m. endings for Western Conference final playoff games in the NHL and all the rest. Golden State. You can't watch, like here, Golden State, you can't watch the great Golden State Warriors more than like 11 times a year.
Every game
ends at 1 a.m.
I do because I work until 2 a.m.
You're a vampire.
Living out west, it was great. Yeah, I'm not sure. It was so nice. And those were the days too. I mean, we're a season now without him, Vin Scully. So once everything's finished for the evening, you sit back and you watch Dodgers baseball in the summer or Warriors games in the fall, winter. It's amazing.
It's amazing.
It's a great way to live.
Now, that said, is there what I noticed being out there for when I've been out there for NHL playoffs or any length of time way back in my younger days is 4 p.m. starts can cramp your afternoons for important events.
I kind of liked it though, say on Saturday nights, hockey night in Canada, because you could watch, say, the Eastern teams and then you can go about go about your evening.
And you may even after the second game, you may go out. I have a tough time. As good as the games are sometimes, and now Edmonton's really interesting again, so they're always worth staying up for. But like Vancouver was for about a 6-7 year span. I don't know about this year. But it's Saturday.
That?
You can sleep in on Sunday. Well, I should save that for Cebulski. He may have a 29th or 30th place team hockey team to talk. I've been there. I've bought the record. I've done that many, many times before. But I would figure again, yeah, you can live your life. It just happens. Everything just starts a little earlier in the daytime. I think NFL at 10 a.m. though would be a culture shock.
That was an adjustment. And
right?
If I'm not a huge soccer fan, so I wasn't up to watch, but that you have to get up even earlier.
Oh my
That's
God.
Nearly impossible.
Yeah, Man United's game Saturday morning would have been at 4:30 a.m. Pacific. You got to really be a diehard.
But no, it took some adjusting, but I like watching sports at 4 p.m.
The one, and that's...
I have a weird schedule.
You do. Tennis is that drawback where I did not like the Australian Open move to evenings in Melbourne because I liked it when the finals started at like 10 p.m. on a Friday night or Saturday night.
Yes.
Now it's 3 a.m. on a Saturday morning or Sunday morning, and I don't enjoy it. You can wake up and it can still be going on, and yes, though for those of us who are fortunate enough to have a PVR, you just do your media blackout. You don't check Twitter. You don't check your phone.
Too hard.
You get up, and you can also fast forward through the breaks in
technology.
The match.
Isn't it amazing?
Relatively is. Now, I got a story of something that happened to me last night, but did know when we're recording this today is something that hasn't happened since 1979. And I don't want to give anything away about our ages, but I was alive and you weren't. And there was a solar eclipse, and we all talked about it in school, like we were young developing minds and talking about science and
staring right at it.
They told us not to,
okay.
and just like the warnings that are coming out today, like either special glasses or be really careful. There will be a burning. Your retinas won't be the same. But this is, people are having parties. This Bonnie Tyler song is everywhere again. Total Eclipse of the Heart. I don't know if that's good.
Oh, yeah. Thanks. That's going to be stuck in my head now. This is the thing that's annoying about social media. I'm excited about the solar eclipse. My family, we were talking about it at Sunday night family dinner this weekend. My dad has made... one of the special viewing
devices. Is he a scientist?
No. Well, he took aeronautical engineering,
oh,
so he is
close
very
enough,
into
of course.
To space. But I'm very excited for it, and I might make my own pinhole camera.
Are you sure you won't be napping?
It's real. No.
At this,
it's just in a couple hours. It's very easy to make too. You can make it with a cookie box or anything, really.
And you'll benefit because are you a big stargazer? Will you be like, there's the Big Dipper? There's the little, there's Ursa Minor.
Well, in the city, it's hard to be a stargazer, but if I ever go camping or I'm away from the city, I like to watch the stars.
You often tweet pictures from a cottage. You get, you, can you, you do.
Not,
I assume
not
you own
often.
The whole estate.
I do not own a cottage. I've just made the right friends,
you
I
have
guess.
That? Now, are you, is that the Northern Lights? Is that, can you
no,
see
I've
the
never,
Northern Lights?
Can I've
you
never
see, like,
seen
Aurora
the
Borealis?
No, I've never seen the Northern Lights. But I'm excited for the solar eclipse. But what I was going to say is with social media, I find it annoying because even though I'm excited for it, it's everywhere. We get it.
Yeah,
there's a
yeah.
solar eclipse. I don't need to know. There's an article in Time Magazine about places that are having solar eclipse specials. Like you
okay.
can get a free or a cheap blizzard in honor of the solar. What? Or a special
well,
donut.
You'd expect a corporate tie-in
I know,
of some sort. That's the day and age.
I guess we're almost
we do live
done.
In.
We're almost over it.
I mean, at the 57 or 58 minute point of Sportsnet Central, isn't there a big like a restaurant company, like a sponsorship? Who is it?
Oh yeah, Swiss Chalet.
Okay. I love Swiss Chalet.
Which right now is Swiss Chalet.
That's right.
Because of Canada.
Because of Canada. So I have friends that are just coming back from Iceland. They went to Iceland, and they're there at the time when the sun is only setting for about like 4 hours a day.
That's neat. I would love to experience
that. But in midwinter, you get 5 hours of daylight, and we think we have it rough here. And like we said, we work those hours where sometimes you just have to give up daylight hours to sleep. I will do that. Within minutes, I may fall asleep while we're talking to James Cebulski. I'm not the first person to fall asleep on him. I don't think that's the case. But 5 hours of daylight gives you from like 10 to 3 or it's 11 to 4.
Yeah,
like,
that would be rough.
People get these seasonal mood disorders, especially when winter lasts too long. I always think about Ottawa. And my sister lives in Ottawa. And I think, what would Ottawa be like? And I always say to people, I think winter lasts like 3 weeks longer. I think it starts earlier and ends later. And that would be depressing somewhat.
I would love to go up to Yellowknife for summer solstice 1 year. Longest day of the year.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it'd be really cool.
Yeah. The commute in
Maybe
itself would be...
Well, yeah, I should have gone when I was living out west. Oops.
it's a little longer flight. That reminds me, a geography teacher was going to take us on a field trip to Tuktoyaktuk. And that was in the process for 5-6 weeks. And then we're like, and then she came in one day, dropped the hammer. I might have missed class that day. I don't think I was skipping. I don't think I was truant. And,
sure.
And then all of a sudden it's like, what? You were not going to Tuktoyaktuk. We were going to go via Edmonton. And go to the mall. That's probably what I was most excited about in the mid-80s.
Yeah.
Late-80s was going to the West Edmonton Mall
what
or whatever it's
this?
Called. 12. Seniors, as it were. They say that in the States. I think we should call ourselves seniors, junior, sophomore, freshman, but we don't.
So you didn't end up going to the mall.
We didn't end up. I've never, I don't know if I'm a bad Canadian, good Canadian. I've only ever flown over Alberta, Saskatchewan, and Manitoba. I've only been to one of the Maritime provinces, and I certainly have never been to the Yukon or Northwest Territories. Cool. I have not covered the ground that, and I hear about Calgary, and I'm like, yeah, I should go. I want to go to a Saskatchewan Rough Riders game.
Same. That would be a lot of fun.
I think a Canadian sports fan, that should be a must-do to say you're really a Canadian sports fan.
So you're really planning out next summer already. Just tell your family and you're ready to go.
Well, I think it's more
road trip.
They want to drive out east. I feel like Saskatchewan, Saskatchewan and Tuktoyaktuk, in that order, are... not 2018 priorities. I
think
like.
You put the mall as number one.
The mall, yeah. The mall. Well, the mall as a general culture thing is not what it used to be. I worry about retail, and then other people tell me not to work because everybody orders everything on Amazon now, or at least it seems that way. I don't think as many people are online as we think. So last night at the Brady compound, we had a visitor. It wasn't a doorbell ring. It wasn't a knock. A small.
Ugh.
Mouse.
Yeah.
I told you about this before.
Yeah, that's why I'm already
now. You say
shuddering.
Ugh, but there's two reasons to be concerned. One is I didn't know that some people have mouse allergies.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, you could be. So if you have contact with one,
is that what they're saying? But really, it's fear.
No, I think this. Well, there's fear. The third is the fear.
Mouse allergies.
The fear comes late. The second is I just assume they're very sick or they
filled
have a
with disease.
There's fly, you name it, flies, mites, lice. They could do those little droppings in your house. There's a million reasons, and I don't think we have an unclean house. I don't think we're an unkempt household. We live near woods, and in the summer, there's bound to be like you'll leave a screen door. They can fit through screen doors.
So did you freak out?
No, Mrs. Brady freaked out, and
yeah,
I heard her
downstairs.
Yeah,
that's fair. I would too.
on the main floor, but our cats corral these things. I don't think we'd hear them. She might have heard the squeak first. So would you rather hear the... You look so uncomfortable right now. Like I've just told you there's some kind of a rash that you need medication for. Would you rather hear the squeak or see the mouse first?
Is the squeak in the cat's mouth?
Last night I feel like it wasn't, but I can tell you it has before. This isn't a daily event.
I've seen
it. It may be a quarterly, yearly event, but it's mostly in the summer. They get in through screen doors and they know you have food. Shockingly, they know humans have food. They've gotten together and decided they know food is available to people.
I know that it's not logical to be afraid of something so little, but I just find them very gross. So I freak out. They're not like Stuart Little.
See, we used to have, now I live way on the country with my parents outside of London. Toads would get into the house in the basement.
Ugh.
I think I'm more in tune with the mouse than the toad.
Yeah, because they're not slimy.
I feel like the mouse knows the dynamic between humans, and they know you're going to try and chase it. They know you might have a cat. They know you're going to try and get it outside. I don't feel that kind of communicative vibe with a toad. I think
snakes.
It's just sitting there. Oh, my God.
Snakes freak me. I saw a snake this weekend. I squeal. I really
don't like snakes.
They're disgusting.
I have, this will sound really cruel. I saw the biggest garter snake I ever saw cutting the lawn, and I must admit I drove the lawnmower at it just because I'm like, I know, it's terrible, but it'll get me in my sleeve. I killed a snake with a lawnmower.
Ghost will get you.
But the mouse was, I was able to get it into a bucket. I never made human contact with it. I put gloves on. I put shoes on. Because I don't want it running across my bare foot. I feel like I'd never get that memory out of my mind. Just remembering this, when I was at Western, second year university, we had such a mouse problem. We lived in a 4-bedroom junk heap that we had an auto dealer, like an auto shop, basically below us. So you can imagine mice everywhere.
Yeah.
You haven't lived a nightmare till you've seen mice come up through your oven vents.
Ew. Oh, that's disgusting.
Thank you.
That's really gross.
I lived to tell them. I'm very...
That's disgusting.
I've recovered since then. I've washed. I've scrubbed. That was 1992. Years of therapy have gotten me over them. So we're going to get to James Cebulski in a little bit. I thought it was interesting on the weekend. Toronto FC had a road game in Chicago. They played the very good Chicago Fire. Actually, I know people. You might, too. So many Torontonians went to see the Cubs.
I was going to say, did people do the
double dip in one day? Because Toronto FC was playing.
I should have planned that.
That's a really good sports day.
Yeah.
Toronto FC was playing at 7 against the Fire, and you could have seen Jay's Cubs. You had a couple hours earlier to commute or go to your local or check into your hotel, whatever. But Toronto FC wins 3-1, and they scored 4 goals at home against Portland last week.
Mm-hmm.
I checked the odds today. They are by far the favored MLS team to win the MLS Cup, which was the very championship they played in memorably against Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
We all know they lost in on penalty kicks in December. When all that stuff was happening at BMO, you had the Grey Cup, I think it was like 2 weeks earlier, then the Winter Classic. There was a lot of stuff happening.
And the field was fine.
At BMO Field. And the field was exactly fine. So it would be really something. We haven't had. We're getting into that zone now, though, where I think any result... Isn't this weird? Like, Toronto FC used to be the laughing stock of the league. You couldn't have run a franchise worse in the first 7 or 8 seasons of it. And now we're in a zone where, because everybody's healthy, everybody likes where they're at, they play really exciting soccer, they're very talented, they have the best odds by far of any MLS team to win. Now it's like they're almost into, like, New England Patriots, Golden State Warriors area where if you don't win the whole damn thing, it's disappointing. Like, you tell me, did we feel that way about the Blue Jays a little bit last year? Like, you made the ALCS
before.
2 years in a row, but you were a wild card last year, and the euphoria of beating Baltimore with the Edwin home run was just, okay, we get more games. And then there were more games because you swept Texas.
No, it's a good point. In Toronto sports, I'm trying to think. There hasn't been a time where a team's a favorite and they are supposed to win. I think you're right. I think this is really the first true moment. Because even last year with TFC, even though they were hopeful to win, and it was disappointing, especially as you mentioned, the way that the final played out, they still weren't the clear cut, you should win this, and if you don't, it's a disappointment.
No.
This year it is. It's such a fun team to watch.
Yeah.
It's just everything about that team is good. And if you haven't, we've said it before on this podcast, but if you haven't gone to a game, you need to go to a TFC game.
Yeah.
When we talk about sports experiences in Canada, I've never been to a Montreal Impact game. I need to go to a Montreal Impact game.
I haven't either, yeah.
Whitecaps games are fun, as we know.
I would think Vancouver would be very fun. I know they played at home on the weekend. Yeah,
but TFC is like nothing I've experienced.
Yeah, and it was like that when they weren't good.
Yes.
And so you can imagine now, it's very euphoric. I'm going Wednesday. They play Philadelphia.
Oh, really?
I have a free evening. Don't have to take my kid to soccer practice. I'll actually take him to the game Wednesday night. So we'll go watch, but it's a quick turnaround off the Chicago game. But yeah, the one thing I can think of is when the Jays made the trades for Reyes and Burley and Josh Johnson, and then they signed Melky Cabrera.
But that was before the season even began.
It was before the season started. But I'd say there were preseason. You're right. That's a big difference. There were preseason expectations. They would have been the proverbial betting favorite because everyone looked at them and thought, oh my gosh, they've already got Jose Bautista and Edwin Encarnacion. This is pre-Russell Martin. This is obviously pre-Josh Donaldson.
Yeah, that's when they went all in the first time.
Bingo. Yes. And
get rid of Noah Syndergaard.
That's right. Yes.
Sorry for bringing that
exactly.
up.
The Ari Dickey deal kind of was the impetus to get the rest of the stuff
but
done.
But yeah, that's a different feeling because that's the start of a season. This is deep in the season.
That's right. You're 10 games away. You are the favorite. You are cruising. To probably
we should
the division
knock on
title.
Substitute wood.
I know. I have never known a Leafs team now very much so in the next couple of years. Maybe there's a Leafs team that is everybody's consensus pick and says this is the year they should do it. I think we feel that way even already about the Edmonton Oilers, that now not winning your division, not getting at least to where they got to last year will be a disappointment, but that's not the same as you better win the whole thing or else. And as we know, we talked about it when Pittsburgh was playing Nashville, hockey is so, there's such a randomness to the playoffs. You got to be healthy, right?
Yeah, hockey, there's never a sure bet. Basketball there is in the landscape that there is today.
Yeah. So it should be super fun. Well, we'll get the Vancouver perspective. As we mentioned, the glory of being up 2-0 on the Boston Bruins.
Oh, come on.
The Canucks were my team. Did I tell you the story? I bought a plane ticket to go to Boston seconds after, maybe hours after, Vancouver took a 2-0 lead in 2011, and I thought, I'm going to go to game 4. I'm going to take a morning off the show, or I'll call into the morning show from there, and I might see them sweep. And as it was, that's the game when Brad Marchand's just punching one of the Sedins.
Yeah. Oh, I remember.
Bong, 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 and they lose 7-1, and you're like, oh, God, this is taking a really ugly turn. Then, obviously, game 7 took an uglier turn on and off the ice.
Everyone in Vancouver now turn this podcast off.
Or they want to hear James Cebulski rebut my comments and tell us the Canucks will be super this year.
Sure.
Because that could happen any minute now. We're very excited to have on. You'll hear him on Sportsnet 650. I don't recommend it listening to it instead of Sportsnet 590 The Fan, but as an enhancement to it to further out your broadcasting day. It'll be a new morning show called Sportsnet Starting Lineup. Again, I would rather that you
Okay, it's a different time zone. And that's how time zones work.
Very different topics. Yeah. James Cebulski will be trioed, if you will, with Steve Darling and Mira Lawrence on Sportsnet Starting Lineup starting September 4th. But you know him, you love him. And, of course, many, many months. Well, you didn't get many years, but many months with Carolyn Cameron.
2 years.
Okay.
Two of the best years of your life, right, Cebul?
So you treat it like a kid. You say he's 24 months old.
Yeah.
He's coming right along.
No, he's always said the two best years of his broadcasting life.
Until now, maybe. I'm hoping it's good.
Let's just not let him speak. This is the longest I've never heard him speak.
Well, if you guys let me get a word in. First off, I can understand why both you guys are not in the marketing department with Sportsnet and Rogers based on that show promo. And when we're talking enhanced, are you saying like I'm like the Viagra of radio now?
Okay.
Right?
Give it another 10 years and we'll both be doing live reads for, five
Don't
in my case.
Sportsnet 650 brought to you by Cialis. If you need a get up, forget coffee, try Cialis.
There's nothing, I will tell you that I worked with a former host who did he didn't do a read for that, but I do think he did a, hey men, if you're struggling with size. Now, he never said he was, but it literally was a penile, like he would take any live read, so it'd be like, hey, get this backhoe to do construction at your house. Now, what about penile enlargement, guys? That's the kind of show it was.
I am Ron Burgundy.
Radio was very different then.
You laugh, but there is a radio station out here in the Vancouver market that would do reads for vasectomies.
Well, if the shoe fits.
And you're saying we're not good at marketing? These are your first words.
I don't know. I don't know if that's one you can do a live read.
No.
For, but, you know, Greg and I.
That's
know,
right.
Hey.
So nobody wants to delve into a deep, dark past, but tell us all this. Tell us all how this came about. Back to Vancouver, where you were for some time, and you were working in radio, and you and I would chat. We will say that. That's full disclosure, and we would scheme. That's it. Like, everyone thinks there's a negative connotation to scheming, but when you want
to... called brainstorming.
When you want to resurrect your career, schemes are okay.
Brainstorming.
And then this amazing...
Let's call it like it is.
Yeah.
We basically rip everybody else in the industry and That's say how they right. how crappy they are compared to us.
Like, how good
how
we...
are they employed and we aren't?
That
Carolyn, wow, is she...
I feel like that was a 10-second diversion from another conversation when Carolyn was brought up. But how did this all happen? It's a perfect harmonic convergence. The Canucks rights, Rogers gets into sports radio. You're out there. You're already working for a Rogers station. Tell us really how this all, the genesis of this.
You know, it's funny how life happens sometimes. And I think the industry kind of turned on its head a few years ago, and it's been a really volatile media industry. And so about just under a year and a half ago, Carolyn and I, we were doing the morning show, Sportsnet Central AM out here, and it just it wasn't viable anymore, and they shut down production here in Vancouver. And, you know, it was unfortunate. And rather than looking at opportunities back east, you know, my kids are out here, and, as a single parent, it was, you know, the idea of going back to work on the other side of the country. It didn't seem viable to have to commute 2,500K. I have a hard enough time trying to get through the Massey Tunnel, so trying to fly across the country every week to play dad seemed a little ambitious. So, you know, it was looking for opportunities here, and one had presented itself working at News 1130 and putting my news hat on for the first time in about 20 years. And it was a lot of fun, and I actually enjoyed this. May sound really morbid, and Carolyn can probably attest to it, but I actually had a lot of fun covering, you know, crime scenes and crashes and murders, and as warped as it may sound, but it was a really fun, different challenge for me, and I enjoyed it. And then suddenly in March of this year, the opportunity had presented itself, and there had been some rumblings that Rogers was at the table discussing, negotiating with the Canucks to possibly secure the radio rights for the Vancouver Canucks. And it all went down back in March, where Rogers had signed a deal, and with that followed the purchase of AM 650. And here we go. And the discussions kind of started along the way. And I think they were familiar with, obviously, with my history and familiarity with my experience at Rogers and working in the industry. And I think they liked what I had to offer. And so the talks kind of intensified. And it's funny, Greg, you can appreciate this, where it, sometimes when you least expect it and it starts to ramp up, and suddenly the opportunity came. And you know, they didn't want to tell me who my co-hosts were going to be. They said, you know, we'd like for you to be on the morning show, and that's great. And I love the idea of it, and to have a chance to do mornings. And who am I going to work with? Oh, we're not sure yet. And then they kind of had a conference call with the three of us, all kind of, okay, who's on this conference call here? And Steve Darling, who's got a tremendous amount of experience, who's been the face of morning television here in Vancouver and British Columbia, for that matter, for the better part of the last 15 years. Obviously part of the mix as my co-host, along with our other co-host, Myra Lawrence, who was the sports director at a station in Victoria. So, you know, two very, very familiar personalities here in the market in British Columbia for years and years with Myra and Steve. And, you know, I feel like I probably fooled the odd person along the way as well with some experience that I bring. So we are the West Coast version of the starting lineup.
That's right.
Dare I say maybe the better starting line.
I'll take, if you're going to throw it down that way, I'll take it. I'll take a challenge. Well, we're on earlier than you. I mean, in a real world clock, where so you can steal all our stuff.
Yeah, totally. You know? I did that this morning. I was driving in. I listened. I was like, okay, what's his take on the Jays? Okay, great.
What a terrible opinion. I won't use that. Yeah.
You know? Yeah, exactly. I was just partying, and I didn't watch anything. So I was like, oh, perfect. I'll just write down these quick notes. Oh, yeah, Osuna. Okay, yeah. Blown save. Yeah, got it. All right. Yeah, still hope. Nope. All right.
And you're okay talking Jays out there? I mean, I know from when, like, living out there is, it's completely fair how West Coasters feel, though, about where a lot of things are based in Toronto, so they worry that there's kind of a Toronto-centric bias.
Oh, you
but
guys are
tons
what's
of
the
Jays
matter with you
fans.
People? You're
there's,
very angry at all of us Easterners.
But there's tons of Jays fans out there, especially the younger generation. Like, if you go along the Seawall, like, tons of people in Jays hats.
You got me on your mind. Yeah. we can be a little sensitive here.
Yes.
We're a little territorial. You know, I think, Carolyn, I think you made the point and the suggestion. Like, you can walk around here through the Lower Mainland and Metro Vancouver, and there are way more Blue Jays hats you'll find than, dare I say, Canucks hats. And, you know, and this is a Jays town now, and it's not a Mariners town anymore. And I think part of that has to do with regional television broadcast rights now, where years back, you know, kind of at the turn of the century in the late 90s, early 2000s, you still had, you know, the odd Mariners game on one of the network affiliates. Mm-hmm. On in Seattle, but you don't have that anymore. All those games are on Root Sports and in the Pacific Northwest. And Rogers Sportsnet carries all of the Blue Jays games, and Canada is the Jays regional market. And so it's all Jays games that are on, and Mariners games are on if and when Sportsnet shows the odd game. And so this has become a Jays town generationally. I think the whole argument about talking Toronto sports, I think there are still some people that will still get their backs up and harumph about it. But to me, it feels like that's more of an older generation that would sit there and nitpick on it, where, you know, 20 years ago, you still had maybe limited games in terms of what you had on broadcast each and every week, where I think now in today's day and age, you know, every Vancouver Canucks game is on TV. Doesn't matter the channel, but every game is on TV. Most of them are on Sportsnet, and the other vast majority of them are on Hockey Night in Canada. So every Canucks game is on TV, so you're not missing a Canucks game. And every BC Lions game is on TV, whether you're watching them or not. Every Lions game is accessible on television, just as every Whitecaps game, by and large, is available on television now. So you can't really complain that you're being underserved or you're being denied or getting pooched in terms of your Vancouver coverage now, because I think just the accessibility is there now. I think the argument now is starting to die off a little bit. You might watch a national broadcast or a sports highlight show, and, you know, your Vancouver sports team may not be front of mind, but I think that kind of goes for a lot of sports networks. And I think in the day and age where the volatility of the business has kind of changed, we don't have, you know, news stations have gotten away from local sports packages locally. So with respect to, you know, you can find something in papers or you can find stuff online. But I think when it comes to, you know, conventional television, I think ultimately broadcasters and executive directors and programmers ultimately choose to go with where their largest bases are in terms of their audience. And you try to, the old expression that Carol and I used to use when we put our show together is play the hits.
Yeah.
And so ultimately go with where your largest audience, you know, and for people that might feel slighted in markets like Calgary or Regina or in Ottawa or Vancouver for that matter, I think the reality is that you're looking at almost a third or at least a quarter of our population is located in Southern Ontario. And so there's a lot of eyeballs and there's a lot of money in ad dollars with the heart of corporate Canada being there. And so until corporate Canada decides to spread out a little more across the country, like there are some hubs here and there, but the vast majority of corporate Canada is still situated.
We took pride too in, though, when we were working together and trying to make sure that the biggest story was the top story, right? And
yeah,
ignoring
and
where it was.
Totally. And I think the broadcast industry could be guilty just because sometimes you've got a lot of people. Look, the hub of and the broadcast hub is obviously in Toronto. And, you know, from a population standpoint, for people graduating from school, you're looking for jobs. For some people that grew up in Toronto or in the GTA, you know, it's working locally for them. And so you've got I think a lot of producers are from Toronto, and sometimes it's what you see and what you're insulated to, right? So sometimes it's like, well, this is a huge story because everybody's talking about the Leaf game, where, and that's where I think some of that Eastern bias, you know, arises in some of the Western part of Western Canada's minds, because, you know, not because it's a story there, it doesn't mean it's necessarily a story across the country. And then I think at times we here at other parts of the country have to recognize just because it's a big story here,
yes,
doesn't mean it necessarily resonates across in other parts of the market. So I think it's, I think at times it's about being mindful of recognizing what's going on for the temperature. And it takes a good editorial sense to recognize that. But yeah, we'd have lots of spirited debates and discussions about, you know, and I think we tried to advocate as best we could. And,
yeah.
But you know, in the wake of the, you know, the absence of regionalism, which, you know, I think a lot of networks have gotten away from in recent years just because of the cost of doing business in today's day and age in the landscape of media.
Well, it's I'll run a test case and mention something on the Canucks in a little bit. But to me, the litmus test for that will be the Oilers. If the Oilers, with Connor McDavid, with Leon Draisaitl, with exciting players, if they had beaten Anaheim in Game 7 last spring, they get Nashville. Everybody's buzzing, oh, Nashville, look at the fan support. Edmonton-Nashville would have done unbelievable numbers nationwide. And Edmonton will be on that late Hockey Night in Canada game a lot. In fact, you know what? They'll be on the early Hockey Night in Canada game as much as they can get when the Leafs are off or the Canadians are off, because they're going to be a big draw, just like in the Gretzky days, just like when Gretzky got traded and then won the Cup a couple years later. And again, you know, in Vancouver, when you guys both got there, there was still a big ebb for Vancouver a couple years off that Stanley Cup. You could see the competitive sense of being able to win the Cup slipping away, but there's still tons of talking points. And nobody debated a team more than that 10-11 Canucks team, whether they liked them, whether they didn't, who the personalities were. Regardless, they were a massive story for everybody out east, regardless of geography.
They were incredibly polarizing, and it's funny to think back. I was still in Toronto at the time during that Stanley Cup run in 2011, and it was amazing that, you know, generally I find people in Canada, when it comes to the Cup, if your team's out of it, a lot of people, I find that most people I know tend to just lean towards the nationalism in terms of, okay, if there's a Canadian team in, I'm cheering for the Canadian team. For the most part, there seems to be that sort of trend or that push. But the Canucks were really the first team I felt like in a long time that had come along. And you know, there were a lot of people that didn't like the Canucks because there were so many players and personalities. I think you also had the Bruins, who were an original six team. So,
yeah,
you know, there's still a huge fan base for Bruins fans out here, especially an older generation that grew up that were fans of Bobby Orr. And you see that in Toronto as well. I think you see it across the country. Like I grew up, you know, growing up in Ottawa, my dad was a huge Bruins fan because he loved Bobby Orr. And so, but the Canucks at that time, they were, you know, there were a lot of unlikable guys on that team. So it was amazing to kind of see the split. But you look at the ratings that project, I still believe that that might be the most watched Stanley Cup game in television history. And I think maybe the most watched non-Olympic broadcast. I think Game 7, and I could be wrong on this, you guys have, you know, we could, you know, check the Wizard of Google on this, but I think it was about 8 million viewers for Game 7 between the Bruins and the Canucks in 2011. So just a monstrous number at that time, and even to this day.
8.76 million trailing only the gold medal game in Salt Lake, not Sochi.
Yeah.
Not Sochi,
wow.
But Salt Lake, when Canada hadn't won in decades. So there you go.
Wow. And so there you go. For a non-Olympic event, but like you're talking about almost 9 million people.
Yeah.
Like that's incredible. That's a quarter of the country, or at that time, I think our population base, almost like a third of the country watching at that particular time in 2011. That's mind boggling. That's with a Canadian team. So it shows you that obviously there's interest there with Western Canadian team. I think the Oilers are a fascinating story.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a team like, look, you know, Connor McDavid is now the face that runs the place, even though Sidney Crosby's 30 now. But I feel like kids are really drawn now to Connor McDavid. I think people want to see what this guy can do. He's flashy. He's such a phenomenal skater. That's a story that I think you have to put up near the lead of, you know, obviously the Leafs are an interesting team, and now they're starting to push to be that team that could potentially win. That window is starting to create. I think they're kind of falling into that win now sort of moment. I mean, when you look at the numbers and the success that these young players showed right out of the hopper, while these guys are still all affordable and manageable contracts, I mean, do you start looking at them as being that window of Taves and Kane and that sort of early Chicago run where you kind of want them to see a win now sort of approach, because in another year or two, you're going to have to start signing these guys to $6 million contracts. And now what are you looking at in terms of your cap flexibility isn't so glamorous as it is for the present, right?
What's the mood like right now in Vancouver when talking about the Canucks? Like, is it a little more positive than it's been in the past couple of years, because there's now kind of a clear direction as to what's happening?
Yeah, and I think that people see that there's a little bit of hope and there's some optimism.
Yeah.
And I think this is the first, I think it was the spring or in and around the trade deadline that I think Jim Benning finally got some love. I think he finally got a hug from the collective Canucks fan base, where I think what he was able to do in terms of turning some assets turning some veteran players into some assets. He made a move. He moved Alex Burrows to the Ottawa Senators, and he picks up Jonathan Dahlin, who looks to be a real solid offensive playmaker and a guy who can produce, who was a second-round pick. But he's 20, and, you know, he's probably still another year away. But here's a guy that they look at as being a legitimate, offensive, capable playmaking prospect that they can envision in their top six in the next couple of years. And he gets that. And then they move Yannick Hansen. They move him to San Jose in exchange for Nikolai Goldobin. Now, here's a 21-year-old and a guy who they can envision having all. He's got tons of offensive skill and potential. And now it's a question of him shaping his game to be more of a well-rounded player. But there's another guy who has top six skill. And for a team that has desperately, desperately needed offense and some scoring potential, this addresses a couple of needs. So all of a sudden, now you've got some hope and some optimism with these two young players, with Dahlin, and now you add Goldobin. They had Brock Besser, who might turn out to be the steal of the 2015 draft, who was the 23rd overall selection. But he comes in late in the season and scores a couple of goals in the final four or five games of the season. And they're looking at him being a possible fit on the opening night roster this fall. So there's a third prospect. Thatcher Demko continues to develop as a real solid goaltender of the future for the team. Had a pretty good year in Utica. And there's a fourth prospect that you can say this is a legit prospect. Ole Ylevi was the fifth overall selection in the 2016 draft. He was the top defenseman on the board that they took. And, you know, he just had another year with the London Knights. Here, you know, does he push for a potential roster spot this year? Even if he's not ready this year, you're looking at him another year away. But now all of a sudden, like, these names creep up, and then they get arguably the best playmaker who was available on the draft board at the fifth overall selection in Elias Pettersson, who also has a long history with Jonathan Dahlin. They were a 1-2 punch together as juniors in Sweden. And so now they look at him as possibly being a real centerpiece. And what he showed at the prospects game, they brought in for a little training camp or development camp back in July. And he dazzled. Man, he can score. He's got great hands, great playmaking ability. And so now all of a sudden, they realized that they needed offense. They realized they needed some players. And they've gone out and they addressed that in this year's draft. They got one of the top scorers in the Western League this year with their top second round pick with Cole Lynn from the Kelowna Rockets. So all of a sudden, the cupboard that seemed bare a year and a half ago for young prospects and development, all of a sudden is shining brightly in terms of what they're offering for hope down the road and for what the main roster has for now, where, you know, you may not have a whole bunch of studs, but you've got a bunch of players like Horvat and Berchi and Granlund and all these little different elements where you can throw in Goldobin, the possibility of Besser, you've got Sutter. And this team may not have any 40 goal scorers on the roster, but they've got a lot of guys who could potentially get you 20 goals.
Mm-hmm.
And you add some low-risk contracts with Patrick Wierkosz, with Sam Gagner, with Michael Delzato. guys who all have a little bit of offensive upside. Alex Burmistrov, who they signed for a one-year deal. None of these are prohibitive contracts, but there are a lot of bridge contracts for these players that can help mine, you know, provide a little bit of offense, can create battles for jobs. They're not prohibitive contracts, and they're there to at least bridge the gap to keep this team competitive, or at least you know, a decent on-ice product until these kids are ready for prime time that they've invested in. But you're looking at now a cupboard that's relatively stocked right now, or at least in decent shape compared to where it was 2 years ago, and that's based on Jim Benning being known for having a great eye for talent, which is why they made him general manager 3 years ago.
So with all this Canucks talk, you're not going to force wrestling on your co-hosts like you've been known to do?
I did drop a face that runs the place earlier.
I heard that.
I never understood what he was saying.
I don't know
when
who
he
is
would
that.
Drop
who, what wrestler, what wrestler or manager
John
runs
Cena,
the place?
Man.
I don't
Cena.
Know that. Okay.
Come on. Carolyn was
from Trainwreck. Yeah, the actor from Trainwreck.
That's right.
Yeah, we once had a full, not an argument in the newsroom, but it was the night of when Adele's album came out.
I'll
and
never
she
forget
had this.
It.
She had the BBC special, and I really wanted to watch it. And it was a debate. I forget how we finally decided it, if we were going to put wrestling on or the Adele concert. I won,
Adele,
though. That's all that's important.
I think Adele won, though.
Oh, yeah, I won.
Yeah.
Yeah.
James, Carolyn does have the television viewing habits of a much older woman. I think that's really reasonable to point out. She's very hip, very with it, but the television shows.
Lawrence Welk show was always on in our newsroom, right?
You know, she's an old soul until she pulls out her Tinder app.
That's a lie. He's full of it.
So tell us one more Canucks thing, and then we'll talk about how great your show is going to be.
Okay, sure.
Or we might run out of time before that. Tell us
we're
how
out of time.
The two players that you didn't mention in the 38 no that
he
you mentioned
them all.
Are the Sedins. So I want to ask both of you, and I want the audience to hear Carolyn's answer after you're done. How does it all end for them? When I first moved here in Toronto from Detroit, it was 07, 08, and that was Sundin's last year, and there was just that he didn't want to get traded, and then there was that uncomfortable offseason where you weren't sure they wanted him to be a part of things going forward, and he wasn't sure because he ironically ended up in Vancouver. So Henrik and Daniel are 37, and they're out of contract at the end of this year. What happens? They can't keep making $7-8 million each at that age, and it'd be real strange for Canucks fans to watch them play somewhere else.
I don't think they're going anywhere.
No.
I don't think they're going to go anywhere else. I think I think they want to finish their careers here. I think the question is where does it go beyond this season? And I think there's a sense now that when you look at a guy like Patrick Marleau and he gets a $6 million a year contract for 3 years, essentially, from the Leafs, and you go, well, you know what? Maybe that hometown discount that everybody was looking at for the Twins going forward, maybe it's not going to be such a deal. But, you know, Marleau still can skate a lot better than the Twins. And I think foot speed is becoming an increasing issue for Daniel and Henrik, who were never really burners to begin with. But they're great ambassadors in the community. I think they're still decent offensive production guys. I guess the issue for the Twins going forward after this year is if they were to play beyond this, and I don't think there would be any issue for them to come at a reduced rate. They've made their money. They've made a lot of money at that. But I think the question is, where do they go after this? And I just don't know if there's room for them in a reduced role for them going forward in 2018, 2019. So say even hypothetically, let's say you get them for half the price. So let's say they come back at $3.5 million players each annually. So they're a $7 million cap hit combined. So it's basically a 2-for-1 price to what they're making now. The question is, could they contribute in a bottom six role and as checkers, or, you know, are they just power play specialists? Like Jaromir Jagr, I think, is a great comparable. And Jagr's having a hard time finding a job because his foot speed's become an issue. Now you're asking for two guys who are kind of cut from the same cloth to be in that sort of role. And that's where I think you wonder, I don't know if there's necessarily a spot for them then, because if you have them in your third or fourth lines, you know, do those guys have the foot speed to really compete to try to match up against some of the top offensive forces in the game today? Like, do you want the Twins out there trying to go up against Connor McDavid? Probably not, you know, and I think that is you know, the issue and the concern now going forward for Daniel and Henrik with their foot speed. I think I can't imagine them being asked to waive their trade clause, or I can't imagine them waiving them. I think they've done too much here. I just don't think they want to say goodbye. And I think at this point, this will be, they'll play out this year of the contract here in Vancouver. I don't anticipate any sort of move before then. And I think beyond that, we'll see where it goes. I think it all depends on what they can offer this year.
Yeah.
They struggled on the power play last year. Maybe there's a little more creativity. Maybe there's something a little more that they can offer. But I think going forward here, this looks to be right now maybe their final year in the National Hockey League. But obviously, guys have shown that they can play into their 40s now and have success even in today's game. They're incredibly fit. They're like nobody tests better in terms of their fitness, in terms of what they do, their training, their preparation. But honestly, Greg, I mean, speed is everything. And Carolyn, you can appreciate this. It's a young man's game right now. And I just wonder whether or not there's room for not one, but two of them on a roster in a bottom six role next year.
Yeah, and I don't think there is, and I think just because of the landscape of this team, it'll be they'll meet with Trevor Linden, who's very aware, based on his career, of how important they are to the city and to the organization, where you sit down and you say, is this it? And if you do retire, I'm sure they'll pick something up within the organization.
It's tough for him to convince them not to play, though, if they want to.
Well, that's what I mean. But it's because of where they are, even if you're capable of playing, because you want to stay in Vancouver and because you're kind of a package deal, it's kind of Vancouver or nothing. And I think it'll be nothing.
Yeah,
they can beat you up the gross grind.
I think Carolyn hit the nail on the head. I think it's going to be Vancouver or nothing for these guys.
Well, yeah. Between grief and nothing, I'll take the Sedins.
They fly up the grind, though, right, Seaball?
They fly up the grind. I think Daniel told me a couple of years ago. I think he did it in about a half hour with the grind, which is actually on a hiking magazine or website that was listed as one of the deadliest hikes in the world because so many people and tourists have these heart attacks thinking, hey, I'll just go do this nice little hike
in my flip-flops and jeans.
I heard it took Andrew Walker 4 days to make it up.
You know what? If you ever have a chance, ask Sid
Sid did it.
Oh, come on.
The gross
who carried him?
Wasn't he visiting you? This is when you were there for
come
the score?
Come on.
Yeah, this was my first year when I first moved out here, and it was back in 2001. Sid came out to visit me along with another good buddy of mine, and I took them up the gross grind. Now,
Sid's a bit. That's 16 years ago. That Sid's not doing that now. Let's be on the. Come on. He'd admit that.
That would be a great segment, though.
Oh my God.
It was a struggle to get up to the top. So it was it was pretty funny. But those guys, like honestly, they're incredible human beings, Daniel and Henrik. They're still in phenomenal shape, but. You know, it's so much of this game now is based on skating. I mean, look at the success that the Leafs had last year. I mean, to use that example, look at the Oilers. Like, the Oilers are high flyers. The Leafs are high flyers now because all these young guys are stepping in and they can skate. And this game just continues to get faster. And I don't know if that necessarily benefits the Twins at this stage of the game, as crafty and wily as they are.
This story would have happened when you guys were out there, and I know I didn't call it up right now, but I know I'm remembering it right, is that Tortorella, every new coach comes in, he's going to up the fitness game, right? So Vigneault's gone, Tortorella's in, and so he made them run miles, and the Sedins were the only guys finishing under 6 minutes a mile, and I'm going, oh my God, like a six-minute mile is bonkers. And I can't imagine being a 20-year-old on that team and having a 34-year-old Sedin brother like dust me off and beat me by like a minute and a half in a mile. That would be like a terrible opening gambit to leave to push on your coach to be that slow.
That's kind of like what I did to Carolyn.
I don't doubt it.
I don't recall that.
Carolyn would be eating my dust.
You misremember.
Especially when you play basketball.
All right, people will ask you the content of the show, and this is why Carolyn and I like doing the podcast. Like I told a story about a mouse in my house, and she's able to talk about all her I was going to say transgressions, but that makes it sound so much
worse. What?
Everyone will say sports or no sports. Will you do like? Will someone say there's two too much sports. Will someone say, ah, they're giving me a non-sports story? Like, you know mornings have to be lighter. You're well aware of this. I'm sure that's being imprinted on you. So do you have a philosophy right now, or will it be kind of organic and you'll talk about the world? You don't want just hardcores tuning in. You want everybody to feel comfortable listening to the show.
100%. I think ultimately the root of it, and Greg, you can appreciate this, it's I think sports first, but you know, obviously I like to think I enjoy other things too. And right now I think the biggest challenge that we have is, you know, Steve, myself, and Myra have never worked together. So it's coming together and it's finding a chemistry and finding what we all like and what we want to talk about collectively. Like, I like watching Game of Thrones. I'm starting to binge watch The Defenders right now on the Marvel series from Netflix that, you know, is already looking to be way better than Iron Fist, which was a complete dud.
You've lost me.
You know, whatever. I haven't watched Suits yet. I'm sorry I haven't jumped on the Suits thing yet.
So good.
Or Bones. She likes one-word titles.
Yeah, I got really into Bones.
Bones, Suits.
A decade late.
Orange is the New Black.
Oh, yeah, that was good.
Yeah, so right now, so it's about finding that balance to talk about. I mean, I'll give you an example, but, you know, through rehearsals, you know, a few days ago, we were talking about the solar eclipse, which was big because, you know, there was 85% of the sun was completely covered for the eclipse. So that morning or during our rehearsal, we definitely had it threaded in our conversation because how do you not? So I think the challenge is to find that rhythm because, Greg, you know, I mean, when you strike a chord with somebody who all of a sudden they're passionate about something, like last week we were doing something on a test run and, you know, Myra was kind of finding her way around, but we got talking about concerts because last week there was Metallica.
Sure.
And there was Zac Brown and Tom Petty were all passing through. So basically three of the whitest bands you could ask for coming through Metro Vancouver. But, you know, all of a sudden the conversation came up about concerts and some of the bands are rolling through. And, you know, it struck a chord with Myra. And all of a sudden, boom, you could just see her eyes light up and, you know, she took a moment. And I think as long as we're passionate, I think that's the important thing about our show each and every morning. It's about having that passion. And if, you know what, if Steve's really passionate about something that particular morning, I think somebody that's just passionate on the air, not to use that word, 10,000 times, but I think if you're speaking from the heart, then I think whatever it may be, even if you're a sports fan and you're listening in the morning and you want to hear sports, if you got somebody that's on a roll speaking about something that they really truly believe in or are really truly against, I think that makes for good radio and that makes for good entertainment. So I think people want to wake up in a good mood and I think people want to be entertained. So I think we just kind of roll with it. I think ultimately we're going to be rooted in sports, but if something's going on and if something takes over the world, like, you know, I don't want to use 9/11 as the example, but, you know, sometimes things cross over and look at what's going on in the world right now. You know, with the whole white supremacist rally from a week and a half ago, that was just the horrible scene of events that was unfolding in Charlottesville, Virginia. I mean, that totally crossed over into sports, and I'm sure you guys probably had to. You guys probably talked about it on your show.
Well, you have to, and you want to. It's both. Yeah.
And that's it, right? And the list goes on and on. I mean, when you've got the city of Tampa and all their sports teams with the Lightning and the Rays and the Buccaneers are all pooling money together so they can pay to have a Confederate statue removed in the city of Tampa. How do you not talk about that? Mm-hmm. And exactly your point, Greg. Like, you want to talk about it because it relates not just in what's happening. It relates to everybody.
That was a good tease.
Look at that. Yeah. Now, the Ticats go 0-18. That's not going to happen.
They might.
Right?
They might.
It's
What a mess.
We don't know what's in the water out east. You do a CFL podcast.
Are you still going to be doing that, C-Ball?
For now, yeah.
Okay, good.
It looks like everything, I think, unless I collapse or something just run out of voice. But, I think for now, I think everything's all good. Davis Sanchez, my co-host, and I, we do that every week. It drops on Wednesdays. And, right now, the Ticats are just a hot mess, and It's disappointing. I don't know how much longer you can keep going until maybe Ken Austin gets you tried to go with your fall guy with Jeff Reinbold, the defensive coordinator, and you hacked him and let him go. But there was just too much talent on this team, I felt, to be in this position. I mean, they're spending, you know, Zach Collaros, a year ago, they signed him to a three-year extension worth over $1.5 million a season. That's big, big, big money in this Canadian Football League. And, you know, Zach Collaros has underachieved this year. I understand his receiving core has been a little beat up, but, you know, they just did not address it. I mean, there were too many playmakers on defense for this team to underachieve at the way they have. They went out and spent money and signed Abdul Kane. You kept Emmanuel Davis. You had John Chick. You had Simone Lawrence. You had Ted Laurent. And they just still couldn't stop anybody. So you traded John Chick last week, who is like Canada's version of the Rain Man. I mean, he's got 8 kids.
Oh, my goodness. See, you're stealing all my CFL topics that I'm doing every morning. Now, listen, really quick, give us 30 seconds on the CFL. By my numbers, West teams against East teams this year are 17-2-1. That's not, I didn't misspeak or stutter, 17-2-1. So give us do you have a theory, a quick Cole's Notes theory as to why, like, the West teams just feel like they've been better since, like, Doug Flutie was in the league? Why is this?
I think management and money probably are two big reasons. Obviously, we're in a salary cap world now, but I think for a lot of years you had teams in the West that were more the haves compared to the have-nots in the East. And so these teams have been able to put a great infrastructure in place and you know, put good leadership. You know, look at the Calgary Stampeders for the last, give the first two teams a bye for the first week and just kind of whittle it down from there. But I think, you know, I think the idea, and I know people talk about tradition, but I think enough is enough.
You're trying to start a civil war.
What are you going to have, the East and West All-Star divisions? Like, you know, your chances are 1 in 4 of being an All-Star every year. you know what I mean? Like, there's 4 teams in a division. So you got a 1 in 4 chance of being an All-Star if you're a starter in the league. That's pretty good odds.
That's true. Listen, that happens. You have a chance of being the first or second highest-rated sports morning show in the city. That works that way. There's pressure, right? If you're third, you're in big trouble.
Yeah, then you
take those results if there was only 2 stations in the market.
Well, we're all out of juice here.
Yeah,
and,
I think we're done.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you. Thanks for being on, C-Ball. I'm happy for you. Good luck with the new show. If we call in, will we get on air?
That sounded like such a patronizing, like, I'm really happy.
Very tepid patronizing endorsement.
C-Ball and I haven't spoken in a year and a half. This is our first communication.
It didn't feel like a ringing endorsement of your future career direction.
You're such a nice person. You just really want to, salt of the earth. You really do.
Okay.
No, thank you. You know what? I appreciate it. Carolyn, it's great to catch up again. Greg, it's nice to actually talk on the air. So many conversations of, you know, if anybody actually heard us, we'd probably have no friends in the industry. We pretty much buried everybody.
I feel just you, but no, listen. I'm happy. You know, I'm a boyhood Canucks fan. I go back to Richard Berdur. I go back to Thomas Gerdin. So I'm more than happy to be up early or right after my show to weigh in on some and it's just a shame the Canucks only play. Boy, you were talking so glowingly about the Canucks. I almost feel like they have a better future than the Leafs. But no, I don't. I do not feel that way yet. No, I do not.
Are you still a long-suffering Tigers fan, too?
Sure. You can't say that because they went to the World Series twice in the last year. They didn't win, but, you know, they haven't won the World Series since
fine.
I was 12.
Everything's fine.
I've never been put in that uncomfortable position where a Jays-Tigers wild card game happens or something, and I have to talk about it. So don't put me in that position. But the Canucks, I have a great affinity for the Canucks. All right, we wish.
Hey, listen, thank you very much for both you guys allowing me the time. You know what? I enjoy listening to the podcast. It's part of my commute home once a week.
I don't believe you.
I do.
Well, and unlike, you know.
I live in suburbia.
I know you do.
Greg can relate to this, Carolyn. We have kids, so we can't afford to live in little condos.
Okay.
These downtown millennials who walk to work and wreck everything for the rest of us, I'll tell you.
I sleep in a Murphy bed. I have a nice fold-up bed.
Their avocado toast and their fancy sneakers. I'm telling you.
Exactly. Yeah. My gluten-free, soy-free, dairy-free, venti-size latte.
My avocado-free avocado.
But listen, we were happy to accommodate your schedule. I mean, we have Roberto Luongo on. He's like, hey, when do you want me? We have Ron McLean on. He's like, when do you want me? We ask you to come on with us, and you're like, this is the small window I have on a daily basis. So we appreciate it.
Did he tell you about the fee, too? You have to. You can write him the check.
There's an invoice. Yeah, send that to Scott Moore directly, invoice.
You know his email.
That'd be great. He'll take care of it, I'm quite sure.
Yeah, yeah. It's called Daddy Needs to Pay Alimony. I'm kidding.
Management would like us to edit that last part out.
Will any of this go to air? I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's a podcast, right?
That's
it's
true. Fine. You can say anything at any time.
No, it's fine.
Greg, Carolyn, thanks for having me, guys.
All right, big fella.
For everybody, Sportsnet 650 launching Labor Day Monday, September 4th.
Sure.
Nice. We'll be listening. Thanks, Seaball.
Thanks, Carolyn. Bye, Greg.
I'm really happy for Seaball to have a new show and to have a new channel starting, a radio station starting in Vancouver. I worked with Seaball, as mentioned, for 2 years, and we had a great time under kind of unusual circumstances because there was only really four of us who worked together consistently.
So you can be
every
it's really
single night.
Small and tight knit. Think think how many colleagues, and this probably happens with you in television, it certainly is in radio. You know your colleagues with them, but you never see them. Like, because of a totally different schedule, or it's weekdays to weekends, and that sounded obviously very close and tight-knit, what you had in Vancouver, so
we didn't have any bosses out there. We didn't have, I mean, the control room was always produced out of Toronto, so it sounds cheesy, but you kind of become a family.
And you can't get called into an office. There are no offices to get called into. So
great.
You just shut your phone off and you're like, oh, you want me to correct that? I didn't get that message 17 days ago.
Yeah, it was a social experiment nightmare coming back to Toronto. How are you supposed to act around coworkers?
That's right. I'm happy for him in that he has to get up when I get up. Like, on the Pacific Coast, but it's like I said, it's why should I be the only one who suffers? Like the audience. Why should I be the only one who has an alarm go off at 3:52 a.m.?
Oh my
Why
gosh.
Should I?
That's when I'm going to bed. Should we do What Up With That?
Yeah, I could get into that concept. Now, am I right about this? You travel to you go to beautiful New York City. You go to the Big Apple soon, but it's in a
Labor
couple
Day,
weeks.
Labor Day weekend for the U.S. Open.
And how many days of matches?
I think I'm just going for a day and night session if I'm lucky. Not the whole weekend of tennis.
So night going into day or an entire 1 day span?
I don't know yet.
It's so exciting. It's so exciting taking
the
train there and you get
it's
the anticipation.
So fun.
I spent 1.5 days there and I saw Patrick Rafter, who was a 2-time defending men's champ that night, lose to Cedric Pioline in an evening match.
He's now Coco Vandeweghe's coach.
I didn't know Rafter was coaching.
Yeah.
Is it? Every ex-great player, men and women.
Well, you got to make
coaching.
A living, you know?
Gotta
put food on the table.
Now, this silly question. Well, you're a hero among all heroes. Do you think Federer will ever coach?
No.
You don't think so?
No, I don't think he will.
He already has nine kids.
And
three sets of triplets.
I think you're rounding up a little bit. he already has a management company, though, with his agent, so he'll just deal with that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So he'll, but will he be around, basically? Will
oh,
you
yeah.
See him
he'll
in
be
tennis?
He'll be the legend. He'll be at Grand Slams and handing out trophies and sitting in the Royal Box. He'll be just fine.
Okay.
He'll be around.
I know he'll be fine.
I appreciate
your concern, though. Well, listen, when Novak Djokovic gets healthy again and wins, averages 2 slams for the next 5 years, we'll wonder what the greatest of all time
I can't,
did then.
Sorry, I can't hear you. I'm just looking ahead at the What Up With That
Can't
topics.
Say I blame you. One bit.
I can't hear and read at the same time.
So what's been on your mind? What will compel people? What will people like to remember?
The other day, I almost saw someone get hit by a car because they didn't look both ways because they were texting on their phone. And I saw a story yesterday where a town in the States, I'll need to Stamford, Connecticut.
Oh, sure.
They are going to, they're thinking of walking and texting being finable.
So, you know, the city...
Honolulu does it already.
Okay, so the city of Toronto wanted to do it,
yes.
And the province turned them down, sort of like the toll roads. John Tory said, let's have toll roads. And Kathleen Wynne said, no toll roads. So Would you advocate for a texting and walking ticket? Now, it's only while crossing the street.
That's what I was going to say.
If you walk into a lamppost,
that's your own problem.
Only got your
text and walk, but I do not text and walk while crossing the street. So selfishly, I think this is a fine.
Is okay. See, I felt the handheld device ticket is quite. I think $480 is a lot, and then your second offense is like $1,000. But I'm now of the mind I don't know any other way. I do think it's a problem. It's not there for me. It's not there for you. But it's there for people, I think, who are A, younger, or B, have way too much going on in their car. And the numbers speak for themselves. There are way too many terrible, awful accidents. Now, would I tell you that some of those accidents involve coffee? Yes. And eating? Yes. And putting on makeup and... reading books
but not
while
as much
driving
when,
the car?
Right, but not as much when you're walking. I can drink a coffee and look both ways when crossing the street.
You're not, well, can you text and drink a coffee and walk and...
I'll try when I leave today. If you don't hear from me, you'll know why.
Did they say how much is a ticket?
It didn't say.
It doesn't say.
No,
I didn't do my research properly. No,
but I just wanted to bring
right
it up.
Is.
Safety first, everybody. That's your lesson of the day from Point Taken. If you take anything from podcast, it's all the Canucks players that C-Ball named... And don't text and walk.
Yes, in alphabetical order, in order of birth here. So it's Conor McGregor, Floyd Mayweather Saturday. We won't talk more about the fight. But Justin Bieber, who postponed his tour because he was whipped.
You were devastated by that.
Cancel two Rogers Center shows. I'm not sure it would have been at one. It doesn't make me hear Despacito on the radio any less.
Oh, great song.
I hope it's like the Macarena. I just hope it's sort of that novelty. That we remember 20 years later. So, but TMZ reports Justin Bieber used to be very good friends with Floyd Mayweather, and they were friends on Instagram. But I bring this up because Bieber unfollowed Mayweather on Instagram as part of a, quote, resetting of boundaries. Now, he goes to a church. He has a spiritual advisor of some sort. Mayweather was very upset. TMZ says Mayweather went, quote, insane, nuclear, and began screaming when finding out Bieber unfollowed him. Without naming names, have you ever had a... you've ever unfollowed someone and you're like, I just can't do it anymore. Or someone unfollows you and you're like, oh my goodness, that hurts my feelings. People take social media too personally.
Yeah, people need to calm down. I don't think I would be very upset if someone unfollowed me.
Someone you knew, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Maybe, but I wouldn't go insane and nuclear. I would just probably think, oh, maybe I'm annoying. I unfollow people constantly.
Okay.
If we're Facebook friends, anyone who's listening, you might want to check again. Because lately I have just been going on a full Facebook cleanse.
And do you just leave friend requests from people you don't know or you're not sure of? Or they're like, don't even know this person. Are they a friend of a friend of a friend of a friend?
Leave them sitting there because if you decline, they can ask again.
But they're not going to come get you.
No, but they can ask again on Facebook, I mean.
So you follow.
I don't need to be friend. I'm not. If you're not my friend, I don't need you to be my cyber friend.
Harsh. You follow on Twitter as of this exact moment, 1,012 people.
That's too many.
Do you want to get that? See, again. So
I need to get that down. So I'm going to need to go and
cleanse. Let me give you some tips as to who you
are. Yeah, I'm going to scroll through.
Greg Bob Brady, McCown. I feel like Bob doesn't follow
but
you. He doesn't follow anybody.
He breaks news, though, sometimes.
I shouldn't laugh so uproariously. I guess he does from time to time. You now follow Sportsnet 650. That's not a person. That's like a robot.
I don't know anyone who works for them.
Nobody that you'd admit to at the end of the day. So, okay, so there hasn't been moment like... No, I'm sure I've had my moments where I've unfollowed, but I do think now here's what I'd admit to. I have muted people and I'm like, if I unfollow them, it won't be a good look. So there's just a muting.
I've never muted on Twitter, but I've unfollowed on Facebook. So I guess you're right, I am cognizant of it,
right?
I don't
want
to hurt someone's feelings.
Are you a blocker or are you a muter?
Oh, I'll only block someone if they're highly offensive or rude.
What about
but
mildly
it's not
offensive?
Someone I know. It's strangers totally inappropriate.
That's true. Yes.
So I'll block them because they creep me out, but I won't.
That would be a weird band name, the Totally Inappropriate Strangers. I would not go see that show live.
Actually, our newsroom in Vancouver, we had a whiteboard, and we would, anytime someone said something like that, we'd add it to the band name whiteboard. It was hilarious. I should start that
here. You should have got a picture of that. A screenshot. So then I'd know some of the names and I could evaluate them. What else? What else? We got a couple. We have time for a couple more.
I'm locked out of my email. I'm quickly trying to open it.
Okay.
It's new. Oh, yeah. Jay-Z bought Big Baller shoes and he's supporting LeVar Ball and Lonzo Ball. And my question is, why? Just stop.
Why would Jay-Z get involved?
Why would Jay-Z care?
So he bought three.
He bought three, and then he said he hadn't received them yet, so they were going to try and send them to
him. They take 4 to 6 weeks.
Anytime I bring up Lonzo or LeVar, I don't usually have a question to go with it. I just want to bring it up because it bothers me.
Do you think it'll get quieter? Like, when the Lakers season starts, and I think Lonzo's going to be really good.
Me too.
I do think there may be a scenario where the Celtics and the Sixers both regret not taking him. Because he is the second pick, not the first pick.
So I'm excited to talk about him as a basketball player and not about his shoes and his dad.
So I wonder if that'll happen more.
Like, I think it will.
Will we get less dad once he's a pro? Because he's not a college athlete anymore and he's not coached and he's not around his dad quite as much. He'll be across the country half the season.
We won't hear from him post-game, which is nice, right? Like, summer league, we'd hear from LeVar because he'd be right there. But in the NBA, you're not going up and interviewing parents.
That doesn't feel
so
like
maybe
it.
We'll hear from him less on television.
Well, I think about this. How many players in the NHL, let's take the NHL because it's a winter sport too, do you actually know even the father and mother's first name? Like, Kadri's dad was a little too prominent, I thought, for a couple years, but that died down. You know, people grow up and they're like, Dad, stop speaking, or Mom. Like, really, since the Lindrosses, I can't think of anybody where I'm like, oh my goodness, there you know the parents and they're involved and they have a say. And
my mom would be mortified if anyone
that's right.
knew who she was.
That's right. She'd never leave a call with management say,
no.
Listen, Carolyn didn't need to be critiqued in that meeting.
No.
Since we were talking about meeting critiques.
Yeah.
I've got one more story. A Chinese crime writer is now under investigation. He's a suspect in a multiple decades old murder. Why? Because it seems he wrote about the murder that he committed in a new fiction novel called, wait for it, it's in Chinese, The Guilty Secret, where an author killed their partner. I feel like that's probably been like 11 Murder, She Wrote episodes that our grandmothers probably watched, but that's, you're giving it all away right there.
He really wanted to share it.
Well, think
you
about
probably
it.
Think it was ingenious.
If
no
you
one's
were,
gonna know
if
it's
you
me.
Were a fiction writer, wouldn't you be really cautious all the time about letting your own life spill in? But you're like, this story happened, and no one will figure this out. I'll just change a name around or two, right?
How long have they been trying to solve it?
For like 18 years.
That's unbelievable.
Yes.
What an idiot.
So, well, Liu Yongbiao has been called worse than that. But he'd already started working on a follow-up, like a sequel to this great book where an author commits a string of grisly murders.
You're going to want the notes for his follow-up if I'm the cops.
Well, he's going to have a lot of time to write it. And lift weights and make license plates. If they do
he
that.
He can work at the prison library.
There. Could be it. Our thanks to James Cebulski. He was just wonderful. We'll edit most of that Canucks answer out. It's just very. I just don't feel like they're going to be very good, but I didn't want to break his heart so soon into his new project.
It's
That's
early.
True. Don't forget, rate us on iTunes. Go there, iTunes, and you can rate the Point Taken podcast with Carolyn Cameron and Greg Brady.
Preferably a high rating.
Yeah, 4 is okay. But 5, nobody's perfect.
Yeah.
My wife's worried about her Uber rating. She had an experience in Montreal where she had two drivers come at the same time, and she was worried she was going to get marked down by the one driver. I'm like, I don't think they'll both rate you if you don't get in both cars.
My friends are competitive about Uber ratings.
Do you have one?
Yeah, and I don't know what it is. I checked a few months ago, and it was lower than theirs. But I'm always I always chat with the Uber driver, and I'm very polite.
Have you ever got a comment, or is it always just a number rating?
I think it's just number.
Is that what it is? I've only taken 3 Ubers in my life, and they've all been in France. So there just wasn't a lot of communication with driver and subject, if you will. We'll be back next week before you leave for New York City.
Yeah.
Before the Labor Day weekend. And
last week to wear white pants.
I might break that rule. I might step all over that rule. I might have them on in November. Be ready. We'll see everybody next week.
You've been listening to Point Taken with Carolyn Cameron and Greg Brady on sportsnet.ca/590.